First, Milwaukee was once considered one of the best cities in the country for African Americans, offering the possibility of good-paying industrial jobs and homeownership. Today, it's become known for being one of the most segregated cities in the country and having some of America's biggest disparities between black and white residents in household income, incarceration rates, and more. Our next guest says he and many other black people in Milwaukee are frustrated, and while city and county leaders have recognized the problems, progress has been tough to come by. James E. Causey is a reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and a 2019-20 Marquette University O'Brien Fellow. He's lived in and reported from the city for a long time. James, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, compare and contrast 50, 60 years ago in Milwaukee, when you say, I think your parents moved to Milwaukee from Georgia, to now.
Actually, they moved here from Mississippi. To Milwaukee for employment opportunities. Milwaukee at the time offered, work in the factories and on assembly lines, a lot of welders and people like that, tanneries, breweries. Everyone needed, they needed workers, and workers from the South, mostly African-Americans, helped fuel that workforce and helped with the growth that led to the city's boom in the 1970s.
Now, in your recent piece on this, you use the words of civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer to kind of frame the situation today in Milwaukee. Over 50 years ago, she said black people were, quote, sick and tired of being sick and tired. I want to give a listen now to a clip of her speaking in Madison, Wisconsin, this, I think, in 1971.
And there's a lot of other young people throughout this country that has been beaten down. But I want you to know something in this audience today. A house divided against itself cannot stand. A nation divided against itself is on its way out. We are going to have to stand up and make demands that will make this country worthwhile.
Can you talk about why you looked back at her speeches when writing about the slow progress in Milwaukee today?
Well, Fannie Lou Hamer was relatable to, she was different than the other civil rights leader like Martin Luther King Jr. and a lot of the black ministers at that time. Fannie Lou Hamer was a sharecropper who worked from the time she was really able enough to really stand and talk and walk real good. And she was relatable because she was like from the people. People understood her. I mean, she got into the civil rights movement very late. I think she was like 44 years old when she's really started to make a name for herself. But one thing about her that really stood out is that she was just so frank. She could talk to people in the ways that, like, Martin Luther King Jr. could not talk to people because he had to maintain this certain level. But she could reach people who they could not reach. And I think she's one of those people who, when you look back at history, she's one of those civil rights leaders who we should all know about, especially in our history books and especially in our school system.
One of the frustrations you talk about in the piece, though, is that some of the same concerns that she was talking about and even her predecessors are still coming up today. Can you talk about that sense of frustration at a lack of progress, maybe even backsliding?
Yeah, I mean, this city is like ground zero for a lot of the problems that are really facing the nation when it comes to the conditions of African Americans. You know, when you look at our conditions, we have one of the highest poverty rates for African-Americans, the economic and housing gaps between blacks and whites are among the widest in the country. Reading scores for African-American boys in the fourth and eighth grade compared to white boys in the same grade levels are among the widest in the nation. We have one of the widest wealth gaps between blacks and whites in this country. And, you know, you wonder, like, from like 1970, when this was considered one of the best places for African Americans to live and raise a family, compared to now, it's becoming one of the worst places to raise a black child, according to some studies. It makes you wonder what happened. You know, yeah, I understand we lost a lot of our manufacturing jobs, a lot of jobs moved overseas took their work to the South, to non-union facilities and places like that. But other big cities suffered the same fate, Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, but they were able to bounce back some. So why has Milwaukee, which is right on a lake, which should be a great generator for a lot of work and progress, why was Milwaukee so late to and still struggling to turn things around? That's where the frustration comes in, because we have more Black leaders right now than ever before. But they're trying to fix a lot of problems that were not fixed before they came into office. And so it's frustration all across the board.
Talking to James Causey from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and a Marquette University O'Brien Fellow, talking about a project he's working on, looking at disparities, racial disparities in Milwaukee, and looking at solutions and visions for the future. And James, let's turn to that now. You've got this project going on where you are inviting people from the community to try to envision, to look ahead into the future. What specifically are you asking for from people?
Oh, yeah. So great question. So one thing that makes this project different is that I'm not going to rehash all the problems that we already know about. We know about some of the things I already stated. One thing I want to look what I'm looking at is like the best practices in other states and other cities. And right here in Milwaukee, that may need like additional funding, mentors, or whatever it needs to in order to be successful. But one thing that I thought was important is like, what is the vision for this city? You know, I don't think it's been really articulated well by our politicians and the people in positions. So what I'm asking for is for the public to create a vision board and think about what you want this city to look like a year from now, you know, and don't focus so much on the problems, but what does success look like for this city? For instance, if you say, you know, you want better police community relations, then on your vision board, you wouldn't put a picture of a police officer like, you know, harassing someone of color. What you would do is show what that success looks like. Maybe is a police officer in charge of a block watch or something to that effect. So what you want to do is focus on what you think the problems are now, but what does solution, what does a great city look like? And what I want to do is when I collect these vision boards, I want to invite our public leaders to have a look at them and see what if their vision matches up to the visions of the citizens of the city. So basically, over the next 3 to 4 weeks, I want people to submit their vision boards to me. Actually, over the next 2 weeks, submit their vision boards to me. You could do it on a 20 by 22 sheet of paper. You could use words. You could cut out pictures. You could write on your vision board. But just what do you want this city to look like a year from now? Because we can't say we want progress unless we know what progress looks like. And so you can submit those vision boards to me, take a picture of it, explain your vision board in a short summary, and email me at jcausey@jrn.com.
And then you're going to take this, you say, to leaders in the community. And I think that might be elected officials. It might be community leaders and others. What are you hoping then they take out of these art projects, in effect, envisioning the future of Milwaukee?
Well, what I'm hoping is that they could look at these vision boards and really see what people are saying. I mean, like, again, we know what the problems are, but wouldn't it be nice to know, like, what if there's a common theme that takes place? It would be nice if the mayor knew what that common theme was. It would be nice if the police chief knew what that common theme was, and the county executive, and the alder people. They need to know what people want the vision to be for this city, because, you know, I'm not sure what the mayor's vision is. I'm not sure what the sheriff's vision is. I'm not even sure what the police chief's vision is, because they never really articulated that very well. However, the public, they have a vision of what they believe the city should look like. And if they haven't, this gives you an opportunity to really sit down and think about it. So maybe I'm encouraging people to do it in groups and really just take the time and be as creative as you can in putting together these vision boards, because I think it opens doors to a lot of great conversation and things that we should be doing in this city.
We're talking to James Causey of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at persistent racial disparities in Milwaukee and asking for public input, artistic input, in a way to try to envision what the city could be, to see what the potential is and how you can get there. You can join in at 800-642-1110. one, two, three, four. If you live in Milwaukee, what do you think when you hear this idea of envisioning a better future for the city? What would that look like to you? If you're a person of color in that community or nearby, what do you think of the job city leaders and others are doing to try to tackle these problems and to make a better future in the city? If you're looking at Milwaukee from the outside, what are your thoughts? What could the city bring to the state of Wisconsin in a better day? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with James Causey of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about racial disparities in Milwaukee, why they've been persistent, and trying to create a better vision for the future of the city and ideas about how to get there from here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you live in Milwaukee, if you used to live in Milwaukee, what do you think about the disparities when it comes to race in Milwaukee? If you're a person of color in Milwaukee or elsewhere, do you feel frustration at slow progress? The same questions coming up generation after generation. Do you see solutions to gaps when it comes to income, incarceration, and housing? Do you see programs that are making a difference? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And James, in your writing on this, you say, you know, there have been ideas and there have been positive projects, but they fall short, a lack of funding sometimes, a lack of coordination or follow through. Can you talk about obstacles even when good ideas do come along?
Yeah, see, that's where a lot of the frustration lies. We tend to do this, like a great idea. Someone hears about a great idea in another city, or they hear about one here in the city of Milwaukee, and we say, okay, we need to do that. And so they hear about an idea. For instance, my idea to for the city to adopt a Cleveland Co-op program, which would create jobs here and really addresses getting people to work who are the hardest to get to work. When I wrote that piece like 3 years ago, the Milwaukee Common Council seemed like they were behind the idea. Everyone on the Common Council signed off on it. Alderman Bob Donovan actually held several meetings about it, and he tried to get people on board. And it failed because there was no money. I mean, for the simple reason they didn't have money to try to copy that idea. And it just seems like, okay, but you have money for all these other things. And, you know, people quit talking about it and it went away. And to me, that just seems like that just doesn't make sense because, you know, we need to start thinking about the end game because while we didn't go any further than just the planning stages for trying to copy the Cleveland plan, Cleveland, with their cooperative idea, they've expanded their program. It's over 250 workers working now that did not work before. They're forming new partnerships, and they're growing even more. So it's just like when you see the growth in other cities and you see what they're doing, and you look back at us and all we did was hold meetings and didn't go anywhere because we didn't have any funding, it makes you shake your head and think, well, what the hell are we going to do? Because what's the plan? I mean, I interviewed someone – Earl Ingram Jr., who's a radio talk show host here, and he's frustrated too. And he says, well, what is the jobs plan for this city? We don't have one. Or if we do, it hasn't been articulated to the people of this city. And I have to agree with that because I don't know what the job plan is. I don't know what the safety plan is. Is the safety plan more cops? That just can't be the plan because if that's the plan, you can't police yourself to a safe city because you can have – there's no amount of police that could make your city any safer. So what is the plan? It hasn't been articulated. Our jobs plan hasn't been articulated. Our crime plan has not really been thoroughly articulated. And that's where the frustration lies. That's why people are protesting and saying we need to defund the Milwaukee Police Department because everywhere else is being – you know, the parks budget is being cut. The school budgets are being cut across the city and across the country. But one thing that never seems to get cut and always seems to get increased is the police budget. And the city is no safer today than it was like last year. We already have 94 homicides compared to 55 homicides last year right now. And it's just like, well, what's the plan? Because the city isn't any safer, and the Milwaukee Police Department wants a 6% increase in their budget just to maintain what they're doing right now. And that's why people are frustrated. It makes absolutely no sense. We have to change it up and do something different.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Dan is with us in Waukesha. Dan, hello.
Hello there.
What'd you want to bring up, Dan?
I used to live in Milwaukee many years ago, and back then there were a ton of manufacturing jobs for the asking. The vast majority of black families had those good-paying jobs and stable families. The main thing that's hurting Milwaukee was the loss of manufacturing jobs, and then you have all the other problems. They wanted to open a meat packing plant in Milwaukee, but it was frowned upon. Those would have been family wage jobs. So you can't really, I don't think the city can be so picky, in my opinion, in this global economy. You know, it's terrible.
Gotcha, Dan. James, you actually wrote about all the things Dad talked about there and touched on that, the lack of manufacturing jobs, the loss of manufacturing jobs earlier. But you also write some cities have figured out, and you were referencing that Cleveland model, some cities have figured out ways to at least partly bounce back from that, and you say Milwaukee hasn't matched that.
Yeah, so, you know, if I could talk a little bit about the meatpacking plant that was scheduled to come here in Citrus City, which is actually just blocks away from where I live. You know, if it sounded like it was a decent idea, it was a promise at one time of 250 jobs, but when you look deeper into the numbers, it was never going to be 250 new jobs. It was going to be like a lot of the jobs were being transferred jobs from where the meatpacking plant was coming, so that it was never going to hit that 250 like we thought. It would have been more workers at that plant, and maybe that would have sparked other development of other things. But when you say that Milwaukee shouldn't be picky, I think it's a time where, yeah, we should be picky. I mean, you don't want just anything in some of these places, because I think our citizens deserve better. We waited long enough, and I think we should fight for the best opportunity. So sometimes you turn down things, but you hope for a better opportunity. However, we can't wait a long time. Something needs to happen right away.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to James Causey from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about problems facing Milwaukee and trying to create a vision for the future and a path to match that vision. Back to your calls. Joe is with us in Mosinee. Joe, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Joe?
Well, the increase in the budget the police department's requesting of 6%, I don't think you should put the onus of the death rate in Milwaukee on the police department. You know, I don't think the two correlate. You got a problem with people killing one another, and the police department, they're not the mediators here. They're trying to do what they can.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. And James, I don't think you were saying the police caused the homicide rate in Milwaukee. I think you were saying there's more fundamental issues there that you'd like to see tackled. Do I have that right?
Yeah. No, I'm not criticizing the police department in that way. What I'm saying is that the police department is requesting a 6% increase in the budget just to maintain what they have right now, according to the mayor of this city. That means, like, it won't be no new police officers, no new anything. Just to maintain what they have right now, they need a 6% increase, which will bring their budget close to $300 million for the city. When the talk of defunding police comes up, it means like the police shouldn't be a catch-all for everything. Right now, the police department is a catch-all for everything. They deal with mental health issues, they deal with crime, they deal with homicide shootings, they deal with, you know, families arguing with neighbors across the street. You name it, they get calls all the time for that. What the defunding would be is taking some of that responsibility off the police department. So that money will come off of that and go into mental health and things like that, that the police are not really experts in, but that funding could go into mental health and let those experts deal with a lot of things that the police wouldn't have to deal with. And so it would just be reappropriating funds just to take pressure off the police department. Because right now, the main thing is they respond to everything. They're stressed out. They don't have enough officers. But you can never have enough officers to deal with a lot of problems of a large metropolitan city. And on the other hand, too, I will say this. I know you can't, when we say that the police are not responsible for the homicides, well, that may be true, but really a city is based off, you know, a lot of police use or data is based on the number of homicides. We talk about Chicago all the time and their homicides, and you know, police get blamed for that because police don't want to see high homicide numbers. Nobody wants to see that. So they do kind of go hand in hand, unfortunately. And is it fair? I don't know if it's fair or not, but when there's fewer homicides, the police department kind of takes it. They like that. They like those numbers when they're lower.
In our last really just half a minute or so, James, I think sometimes people look at Milwaukee from inside and out and maybe feel a sense of hopelessness that the problems can't be fixed. In our last half a minute, do you feel hope?
I have to feel hope. I mean, I'm a citizen of this community. And if, you know, too many people are, you either have to, like my father says, use the bathroom or get off the pot. So if you can't just stand on the sidelines and criticize. You have to be a part of this. And that's why this project encourages citizens and everybody to participate and be engaged, because no mayor, common council, or anybody could solve this by themselves. It takes citizens to be a part of it as well.
James, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Hey, thank you.
James Causey is a reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joined us to talk about why the city's been slow to deal with disparities between white and black residents. You can find a link to his writing and his project, where he's inviting people to send in their vision boards. You can find out how to do that. We've got a link up at WPR.org/Central Time.